Second and 10. Holmes back again. He's looking. He's looking. He's pumping. He is going deep. And is it a touchdown? I'm awaiting the signal.
It is.
It is. Touchdown. It goes all the way down. A 22-yard touchdown to Clement.
What a great throw by Nick Foles.
How about that, Mike Sielski?
I remember sitting in U.S. Bank Stadium watching that play and thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe Nick Foles tried to make that throw, let alone that he made that throw.
Yeah, think about the heroes of that Super Bowl. Nick Foles, Corey Clement.
Right? Immortals here. And
Nelson Aguilar.
Yeah.
Like all these guys. It was so great. And today is the fifth anniversary, which is why we play that highlight. Good morning, everybody, with Mike Sielski. I'm Glenn Macnow. Now, it's a brisk. Well, it's more than brisk. It's a freezing morning.
I can't wait to get on that plane to Phoenix tomorrow, just for the weather.
I'll enjoy yourself. Anyway, we got so much to talk about as the Eagles are 1 week away from playing in Super Bowl 57, where we are in the very unusual position of them being favored. But first off, really good news dropped last night. I don't know if people have heard it yet, but the Eagles re-upped Jeff Stoutland, offensive line coach and running game coordinator, to a multi-year contract to stay in Philadelphia. Apparently some other teams had approached him about becoming their offensive line coach. Mike, I don't think you're going to disagree with me. This is obviously really good news for this team. This guy is one of the best position coaches that I could name in the history of football. He has Jeff Stoutland University.
Yep.
And the timing of it a week before the Super Bowl, right? Everybody gets a lift by that.
The testament to how good a coach Stoutland is that Nick Sirianni is the third head coach with the Eagles that he has worked under. He came here with Chip Kelly. He worked under Doug Peterson. And Sirianni kept him on staff. And, you know, it's interesting, Glenn. I went up to Staten Island, where Stoutland is from, on Thursday. I'm doing a piece on him for the Inquirer that'll be out next week. And it's rare that an assistant coach in the NFL becomes a cult figure in the city where the team is, but Stoutland has become that. The way the offensive linemen speak of him, the way the Eagles have done so much to try to keep him here and retain him here, it is. This is nothing but good news if you're an Eagles fan.
It's rare that a lead columnist for a major metropolitan newspaper does a column leading up to the Super Bowl on a position coach.
Yeah.
So I look forward to that.
Interesting anecdotes out there.
Can you share the one? I don't want you to blow your column.
No, it's okay. It's a great anecdote, and it'll be in the piece. So one of the people I spoke to was Stoutland's college roommate and teammate at Southern Connecticut State. And he told me that when he and Stoutland were in freshman year anatomy class together, they would diagram football plays on the top of their desks, but they wouldn't use a pen and paper. They would use M&Ms. And the small regular M&Ms were the skill position players, the quarterbacks, the running backs, and the wide receivers. And the bigger peanut M&Ms were the offensive and defensive linemen. And if the play unfolded and a skill position player was going to get hit, they would crunch that M&M and talk about how, you know, one of the peanut guys missed the block.
I love that. That's great. I look forward to that story, and it is great news about Stoutland. All right, Mike, when I used to do the show with Ray Dinger on a regular basis, and by the way, Ray's joining us at noon today. We're going to have Ray kind of break down Eagles versus Chiefs, and Seth Wickersham, the senior writer for ESPN, is going to join us at 11. We'll talk Eagles. He wrote the book on Brady and the Patriots, so we'll talk about the Tom Brady, the latest in what may be a series of retirements. But Ray and I used to do a feature called Dumb Things People Said This Week,
mm-hmm.
where I would play something for Ray, and he would slap himself in the forehead and go, oh, I knew Skip Bayless when he wasn't.
Can I just say I'm glad I was never the subject of that segment?
No.
Thank you.
No. Anyway, there were many nominees this week, and I want to start with Julian Love of the New York Giants, who earlier this week was on NFL Network's Good Morning America.
Good Morning Football.
Good Morning Football, excuse me. Yeah, Good Morning America is on ABC. Sorry about that. Good Morning Football, where you will hear his opinion of Nick Sirianni, as well as all the co-hosts of that show cackling like morons. Here you go.
He's a guy who really is doing a good job because he's not getting in the way of his team. He has an experienced roster from top to bottom, offense, defense.
You see this stuff, though? Like, what's your reaction as a player? And that guy's doing it.
I don't like it. Yeah. I don't like it at all. I mean, he's in it for a free ride right now. You guys can coach this team. And
first of all, really nice laugh on that woman.
Yeah.
God forbid. Anyway, when he was reacting to Nick mugging on the sideline mm-hmm. and making faces and so on, but his bottom line was that Nick is a passenger
yes.
on this bus, and anybody, well, he's the driver, but anybody could drive it. It's on autopilot. I'm trying to figure out this metaphor. And there's so much talent on the team that Nick's inconsequential. Mike Sielski.
Yeah, not true on multiple levels. First of all, if you've spent any time around professional sports, whether you're talking about the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, what you learn is often the most talented teams and the most talented athletes are the ones who are the hardest to coach. That because you have so much talent at your disposal, you have to keep everybody happy, you have to get high caliber players to buy into a system. So the idea that just because the Eagles are deep and talented, therefore Nick Sirianni's job is easy, is in many respects wrong on its face.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, watch the way they play. This is a well-coached team. This is a team that can go out there and, depending on the opponent it's facing each week, adjust its game plan to attack whatever strengths and or weaknesses an opponent has. We saw it in this postseason against the Giants and against the 49ers. Jalen Hurts, not particularly productive throwing the ball. That's okay. The Eagles will run the ball all day long if they need to. That's just one example of what they've done all year. I think this is a lot of sour grapes from a guy whose team basically got beat handily three times by the Eagles this season.
Yes, and the thing is, the Eagles have a ton of talent, and that's testament to the general manager, it's testament to the owner, it's testament to how he coaches them, but he has also created a culture, which is what a coach does well.
Right.
You've been around teams. You can have teams of a lot of talent where it goes south. 2011 Eagles.
Exactly.
The players like him. The players respect him. The players want to play for him. He's put together a good staff. It works. It works. His strengths are his ability, I think, to get along with and motivate people. That's a huge part of any coach's job. And by the way, I was thinking about this the other day, because when they hired Nick, I didn't know anything about him, and we all learned about him that first news conference, and mm-hmm. I think every single person, without exception, had the reaction of, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about the guys they almost hired, the guys they interviewed. Would it have been the same with Josh McDaniels? Would it have worked with Todd Bowles? Would it have worked as well with Jared Mayo or Kellen Winslow? Not Kellen Winslow.
Kellen Moore.
Kellen Winslow, not him. Kellen Moore. Would it have worked as well? And probably not. I don't think it would have.
No, I don't think so. I think the one thing that Nick brings to the table that is an underrated quality in today's professional sports environment and getting players to respond to you is authenticity. Look, I don't love the mugging on the sideline either. I didn't care for it, for instance, in Indianapolis when, after they beat the Colts, within a week of the Colts firing Frank Wright, Nick's mentor, that he was standing on a bench gesticulating to the fans. I think he's got a little bit of maturing to do in that regard. But having said that, the players don't mind it because it's Nick being Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And that works nowadays. Players don't want to feel like they're being sold a bill of goods by their head coach.
Yeah.
They don't want a guy who says one thing and does another, or tells them one thing and doesn't follow up on it.
Yeah.
Nick is Nick. And they trust that Nick is going to be Nick, and they respond to that.
I think that's a great point, to which Brandon Graham was asked about what Julian Love had to say.
You know, people always got something to say when they at home. So they got some stuff to think about, so I ain't really going to touch too much on it. I just know that Coach Sirianni is, it don't matter what he did last year with a team that, you know, nobody thought was going to do much. You know, he ended up getting us to the playoffs. And then for his second year, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get better. You're supposed to bring players in to get to do exactly what you need them to do. And we did that.
My favorite part of that is I'm not really going to comment. I don't want to get in a feud with the guy, but that's what people say when they're sitting at home.
Yes.
So a little backhanded, passive aggressive.
I love
take.
Any kind of response like that where the victim doesn't know they've been criticized or responded to until they kind of look down and see the pool of blood at their feet from when the knife has gone in their belly.
Yes.
And it's interesting because Graham said something I thought that was really insightful after the championship game. I asked him about how did the Eagles get to this point? You know, what was Nick's role in this? You know, how did you guys go from being 4-11-1 in 2020 to being a Super Bowl team in 2022? And he said, you know, you guys made fun of Nick because of the flowers and the press conferences, but we all saw what he was and followed him. And, you know, I think one of the things that gets kind of undersold nowadays is that so many athletes now express themselves publicly through social media that the idea of a coach being demonstrative or authentic doesn't bother them or is an asset. Because they're coming up in an environment where everybody is expressing themselves publicly all the time. It's not the environment that I came up in as a, you know, 20-something in journalism and newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the environment you came up in.
No, no.
But it's the norm nowadays.
Yep.
And it seems to me Sirianni has adjusted to that or, you know, accepted that pretty well.
He gets this generation of players and they get him. By the way, I understand that Brandon Graham doesn't want to take a shot at Julian Love, but we can, which is to remind Julian Love, who's obviously not listening at the time, but to remind our listeners that the Eagles in Week 14 played the New York Giants, and early in the game when the score was 7-0 and it was 4th-and-7 for the Eagles, I believe they were at the Giants' 41-yard line, Julian Love was called covering Devontae Smith. And here's what happened.
Eagles on the season are decent. On fourth down, Hurts back again. He's floating it for Devontae Smith, who makes the catch. The Giants miss, and he walks into the end zone.
Oh,
the Giants
goodness. Gambled,
and Hurts went 41 yards for the touchdown, beating Darnay Holmes,
who came
up, flat out missed him, and trotting into the end zone was Devontae Smith.
Well, it was Holmes, but also... It was also Julian Love
that
beat on that play.
Yeah, that was one of the more memorable plays of the season where you saw these two Giants defensive backs looking like they're going to converge on Devontae and just crush him. And all of a sudden, he's caught the ball and sashaying into the end zone. And the
waving it to both of them.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, there you go. Julian Love, have a great offseason. We wish you the best. We'll see you next October. By the way, let me give the numbers. 215-592-9494. We don't take a ton of calls, but we do try to work your phone calls into every segment. So if you call, we'd love to hear from you. All right. I want to transition to another enemy of the state, and that would be the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, who decided to kind of take a shot at Howie Roseman and the Eagles organization, explaining why is it that the Eagles are back in the Super Bowl again, and the Cowboys for 28 years in a row are not. And so here's what Jerry Jones had to say.
In essence, we're seeing a couple of teams that have had some real success putting it all out there and paying for it later in Philadelphia and Los Angeles. Don't think that doesn't pop my head and get my eye as far as doing it, and I know how to do that. And it's a part of what you put in that computer or what comes out, and we'll see how it comes. But that's pretty impressive to have two teams in the last 2 years empty the bucket and get to the Super Bowl.
Okay, so here's what he's saying. He's saying, I mean, it's obvious what he's saying. He's saying that last year the Rams won by basically putting everything.
Yes. Trading draft picks,
signing guys to huge contracts, doing it, and like, hey, we're gonna try to get there this year, and it worked out for the Rams. And the Eagles are doing the same.
The Eagles
are doing the same?
The Eagles are not doing the same. First of all, the Eagles have two first-round picks next year. So the idea that they've emptied the bucket in pursuit of the Super Bowl this year, look, what Jerry is doing is trying to rationalize the fact that the Cowboys haven't been to an NFC championship game in 28 years, let alone a Super Bowl.
Well, he's thinking long term.
Well, yes. You know, I would love to know.
He's thinking long term.
I would love to know who's the person in the background you can hear saying, right, when Jerry cites the Eagles as a team that goes all in and empties the bucket. Because it's not true.
No.
It's just not true. And you can look at what the Cowboys have done under Jerry where you make a long-term commitment to a Dak Prescott and you sign a running back in Ezekiel Elliott, who's now in clear decline.
Yep.
In the NFL, that's going all in. That's saying these are the guys we absolutely have to have, and we will pay whatever we have to pay to keep them.
Yep.
What the Eagles are doing is saying, you know, there are certain guys who we're going to keep here long term, but we're going to maintain enough roster flexibility that if an opportunity to acquire A.J. Brown comes up, we can make that move. We can sign James Bradbury, for instance, to a one-year contract, bring him in and play cornerback. That's kind of the intelligence and the genius of what Howie Roseman has done. He's allowed to be able to correct mistakes and make big moves whenever the opportunity presents themselves.
It's so disingenuous because he knows it's not true.
Right.
The Eagles have not mortgaged his future. He's smart enough to know that. And as you just pointed out, he has to a large degree done that. He's the one that's got the quarterback with the $190 million contract. The Eagles may have to go there after this year, probably will, and things will change. But the Eagles got there this year without mortgaging their future and left themselves in good shape via the draft, at least. All right, one more, and this is the old one. I'm not going to play it again, but we had Micah Parsons earlier this year saying essentially Jalen Hurts was a system quarterback, and
right.
I kind of got what he was saying, but it's still at some point you got to give Jalen Hurts a lot more credit than that. The Eagles lost twice with Gardner Minshew. I think that narrative kind of stopped, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the bottom line, Mike Sielski. How did they manage to get to the Super Bowl considering they had a GM who sold out? They had a know-nothing coach, or a do-nothing coach, I guess, a system quarterback, a soft schedule, a pass in the postseason. What did I leave out? How is it that this Eagles team, which, and by the way, a lot of people said it's the best Eagles team in history. It will be if it wins, okay? Which has a very good chance to be the best franchise, the best team in the history of the franchise. How is it that it gets no respect, asked Rodney Dangerfield?
That's a really good question. We were talking about this before the show in that I do feel like Philadelphia is, and I've used this phrase before, like under the dome, right? Like people here don't pay as close attention to what's going on in the national scene.
Yeah.
In sports, and people in the national scene don't really understand what's going on in Philadelphia.
Correct. We're a little parochial, and the rest of the world doesn't see us.
That's exactly right. I think some of it is the residue of what's happened in the past that has gotten the Eagles, in some ways helped to get the Eagles to this point. I'll give you an example of what I mean. Everybody saw the Carson Wentz situation blow up in 2020 and 2021, and everybody pointed out, rightly at the time, that the Eagles were eating so much money to move Wentz. They had poured so many resources into him, traded up twice, given up all these draft picks, et cetera, and it didn't work. But they were smart to move on when they did.
Yeah.
They were smart to bite the bullet
they
and say,
contract.
It ain't going to work.
Yeah.
We've got to shift. Jeffrey Lurie talked about this the other day after the championship game, is you've got to make these tough decisions sometimes. And yeah, nationally it's, oh my gosh, can you believe they committed to Carson Wentz? Meanwhile, They draft Jalen Hurts, they take a chance and it works out, they make some other smart moves, and it's not the big thing that got them here. It's this trade here, this acquisition there, this draft pick here, and it's like, what's the fable, right? Slow and steady wins the race, and that's kind of what they
done. Exactly what they did, yeah, absolutely. By the way, I got one quick Jerry Jones anecdote from yesterday, which is a friend of mine, Mike Sokolowski, who texted me about this last night, is in New Orleans for a bachelor party, and they're at a very fancy restaurant. I'm guessing, what's Commander's Palace?
Commander Palace, yeah.
Love that restaurant. Oh. It's great.
And Emeralds is tremendous. It's a tourist trap, but
anyway,
it's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so Jerry Jones is in the restaurant, and he's there with a bunch of guys from Philadelphia for a bachelor party. So the first thing they did is they sent Jerry Jones a shot on top of a napkin that said, "Go Birds." And then, which he waved to them, and then they decided from their table to do an E-A-G-L-E-S chant. And apparently the maitre d', I want to find what he said, the maitre d' came over to the table and said, "I wouldn't recommend doing that again." He said, but as they walked out, he was still there. He said, "We all walked out and individually went by his table and said, 'Go Birds.'" He was a good spirit about it.
So, Jerry,
I love Mike. Well done.
Yeah.
That's representing Philadelphia well. You find Jerry Jones in New Orleans and you give him a hard time.
That's great. Jerry, there was an ESPN profile of him a few years ago, and the profile was practically soaking in Johnny Walker Blue because that's what Jerry drinks.
They sent him one of those.
Yeah. That's like, you know, $50 a shot. I mean, it's amazing. But he must have been drowning his sorrows the other night in New
Orleans. Someday I have to tell you the story about how I inadvertently bought Jim Nance a bottle of wine at that restaurant.
You did?
Yeah, during the NCAA finals. I don't want to work it now, but it's a good story. I'll tell you sometime.
Yeah.
Brian and Booth Wynn starts us out. Brian, what's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I love listening to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
I haven't called in a couple years, but I just gotta tell Jerry Jones, if what the Eagles are doing right now is wrong, brother, I don't want to be right. Because we have plenty left in the cupboard. Our GM is not only the top GM in the league, but that guy spins all the numbers, and he never comes up doing anything illegal or, you know, however you want to call that in NFL terms. He's just better at it than everybody else. And I would love to see, after we win the Super Bowl at the draft, maybe another David Ickes thing. We bring a big bucket up, and it's all full. And say, after 2 and 5 years, the bucket is still full.
Oh, that's good. Hey, Brian, good thinking. Well done.
Thanks,
nicely
Brian.
Done. Draft is in Arizona this year, I think.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's the other component that we haven't mentioned with respect to Jerry Jones is any owner would be frustrated if they've gone 28 years and their franchise hasn't won a Super Bowl. But the fact that Jerry is the general manager and he's getting outfoxed and outsmarted by a guy like Howie Roseman, who is, quote-unquote, not a football guy. That's got to stick in his craw.
Absolutely right. We'll get John and Manny up here before the break. Hi, John.
Hey, Glenn. What's up, buddy?
We're good, pal.
I think the Eagles are going to win, but my one big worry is how are you going to track Kelce? You going to put a safety on him? I don't think a Kazir White Weber or a linebacker can cover him.
Yeah, you know, John, I think they're going to try both Avante Maddox and C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You know, I think, and we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the game, I think, a little bit later with Ray around noon. But, you know, the key, more than covering Kelce, I think, is going to be pressuring and confusing as much as you can Patrick Mahomes. If you go back to that Super Bowl a couple of years ago when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers destroyed the Chiefs, Mahomes was running for his life the whole game, and that's the key there. It's not going to be so much can they stay with Kelce, it's going to be can they get to Mahomes and keep him from getting the ball downfield.
He's so good at finding the seams.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he does. He's covered, and then all of a sudden he's between, which is why zone coverage is tough on him, which is what makes me nervous because they're going to do zone coverage. Here's John, and by the way, the Eagles have been very good against tight ends all year. John, here's what I think. He's going to have 9 catches for 98 yards and a touchdown, and the Eagles are going to win. That's what I think.
I hope so.
Okay, so it's he'll do his damage.
Yeah.
Their wide receivers are not great. Hardman's out.
Mm-hmm.
You keep them from doing damage. They have the good young running back. Again, we'll cover all this with Ray later, but to me it's like, you give them, it's in the NBA, like, okay, we're giving Jordan 30 points.
Yeah, look.
We'll stop the other guy.
Look, they couldn't stop Rob Gronkowski 5 years ago either.
Right.
He was the Patriots' best offensive player, and they still managed to win.
Well, hopefully they don't give up 510 yards this game, but we'll find out.
Hey, it's the formula that works, Glenn. I don't know what you're complaining
with
about.
It. Yeah. 215-592-9494. As we said, Ray's going to join us 11, Seth Wickersham of ESPN at 11. And we want to talk to you all day. We are excited, a week away from the Super Bowl, on the anniversary of the Eagles winning the last one. Very good vibes in this city right now. With Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack, now on 94 WIP. With Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack now. We'll get to the phones in just a minute. 215-592-9494. All right. Switching gears for a moment, but staying in the theme of dumb things people said this week.
There's a surplus of it this week.
There is. And I think this one takes the cake. In case you missed the news, Tom Brady once again retired this week.
Again?
Yes. Which prompted more stupid things to be said. You know what? I don't even want to set it up much more than that, other than to say this is former offensive lineman Sean O'Hara, had a long career mostly with the Giants, center for the Giants, was on the NFL Network soon after Brady retired, and this was Sean O'Hara's take.
This is a huge moment, not just for Tom Brady, not just for the NFL, but like for all of us. You know, look, people remember where they were when JFK was assassinated. You remember where you were with 9/11.
Can I tell you something? Can I interrupt you real quick? His first start was a week after 9/11. That's how long ago he's been playing.
I came out the same year as him, 2000, and he's still playing. 23 years, that's a long time, but I'm going to remember this. Like, I'm going to remember who I'm with. Kyle's going to remember he was in Vegas. You're going to remember where you were when Tom Brady announced his official retirement. And it sounds like this one's for real.
Are you out of your freaking mind? Listen, I am old enough to remember where I was when Kennedy was assassinated. I was in first grade coming back from lunch when the teacher told us about it. And mm-hmm. We were little kids. And it's one of the moments that scarred my life. I remember where I was when 9/11 occurred, which was driving on the Schuylkill to do the show, hearing Al Morganti tell me that the first of the Twin Towers had fallen down. I didn't remember an hour after Brady retired where I was.
Never mind
what,
that.
What?
You're equating the retirement of a professional athlete to two national tragedies.
Yes.
Like, this is ridiculous. First of all, bad week for current and former Giants when it comes to weighing in on
yes.
the news of the NFL,
yes.
number one. Number two, this to me strikes me as the kind of thing that someone who wants to make a rise in the sports analyst business says to try to garner attention. That Sean O'Hara would suggest that the second time that Tom Brady retires is the equivalent or akin to John F. Kennedy's assassination, the terrorist attacks of 9/11, or, and he didn't say this,
world-shifting events.
Yeah, like not even the Challenger. I remember where I was for the Challenger disaster in 1986.
Detroit, Free Press Newsroom.
Like,
yeah.
They're not the same thing.
No.
They're
no,
not the same thing
it's
at all.
So disrespectful to that, and I'm not sure that's the word I'm looking for, but off.
Like, you really have to be in a tunnel
yeah.
of football
yeah.
to think that Tom Brady retiring is in any way on par with those other events.
Yeah, anyway.
You really do.
Yeah, and okay. Well, that's the last of things people said. We'll get, I'm going to get to the phones in a second, but so Brady is now going to become a broadcaster, and before we go back to the phones, I want to talk about that, because he signed last year,
mm-hmm.
I guess upon his first retirement or as a futures contract, a 10-year, $375 million deal to be the lead analyst on Fox, which was put on hold when he went back, and Greg Olson kind of went into that job. Greg Olson will be doing the Super Bowl next week. I like Greg Olson, and I think Greg Olson will be better than Tom Brady. I guess I'll pose it in the form of a question to you. I know you like Greg Olson, so we don't have to cover that. Do you think Tom Brady's going to be any good at this?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have absolutely no idea. To me, this is the ultimate ironic situation if you think about it. Go way, way, way back. When Brady was playing at Michigan, he was Michigan's starting quarterback, and he was good, and they were winning games. And he got supplanted by a bigger name, by Drew Henson, who was the big recruit, the two-sport athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to be Mr. Everything.
Yeah.
And Brady ended up losing his job, not on merit. It didn't have anything to do with the way Brady was playing. It was simply, well, Drew Henson's got to play because he's Drew Henson. And the same thing's going to happen here, I think, to Greg Olson. You're right. Greg Olson is terrific. He and Kevin Burkhardt are going to call that Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl, and it's going to be excellent. I can't guarantee anything about the Super Bowl, but I guarantee that the broadcast is going to be terrific. And Brady's going to come in and take Greg Olson's job, and I have no idea how good he's going to be as an analyst.
I think, and maybe it's just me because I live in Philadelphia, I don't think Brady's got a lot of likability.
I think you're right.
I don't. And we will see how he turns out. I'm guessing, venturing, betting. You remember when they had Joe Montana, the greatest quarterback in football in the history of football, when he retired,
mm-hmm.
and Joe Montana went into the same gig broadcasting, and he was terrible because
yep.
he didn't want to say anything.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And I feel Brady may be the same thing.
It's rare to get, I think, the golden boy quarterback who is really good at that job. Troy Aikman is and has been for a long time, but Troy Aikman was also a pretty affable guy, from what I understand. When he was a player, he was smart, he was accommodating, he didn't hate the media, he didn't look down on anybody. That ain't Tom Brady.
No.
That ain't Tom Brady.
I interviewed Aikman a couple times, and he always was. It was a good interview.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever was in a position to interview Brady, but whatever. And by the way, last thing on this, poor Greg Olsen. I read that his contract is he gets $10 million a year if he's the A-team broadcaster. I think it was $2.5 or $3 million a year if he's not.
Right.
So he loses. Brady retires, and, you know, it may not be as memorable as the JFK assassination to everybody, but to Greg Olsen, he just lost $7 million bucks.
That ain't right.
No,
that ain't
right.
It's not about merit.
And it's right. It's because one guy's the greatest quarterback ever, and the other guy's a tight end.
If I were Greg Olsen, I would have no compunction about, it's easy for me to say this, but I would have no compunction about saying to Tom Brady, hey, pal, you better be good. You better be really good. And putting some pressure on him because
we'll see.
You know, it ain't right.
No, it's not right. Rob in Glen Olden is with us. Rob, what's going to happen a week from today?
Hey, Glenn, I had to call guys. Hey, Mike, how
hi,
are
Rob.
You? Listen, you know, I'm superstitious just like everybody else or a lot of people. So I called up. I wasn't close, but, you know, I said 40 burgers the last 2 weeks. But they, you know, we couldn't predict knocking out a third string and a fourth string quarterback. But, hey, our defense earned that right to do that.
Yep. For people, because the narrative out of San Francisco this week is, oh, we would have beat them if they're in the quarter. The Eagles rushed for four running touchdowns, and the best run defense in the NFL. So apparently, the Eagles. I don't think that Brock Purdy had anything to do with that.
No. And I got a score for you at the end. I got two strategic points. One, I like our matchup of our wide receivers against their secondary, who I think has a couple of rookies in it, and I like the matchup of our secondary against their wide receivers. And my second point is this. If we can kind of follow, I know it's easier said than done, the blueprint that Tampa did a couple years ago, where he just rotate guys, and he was healthy in Mahomes. Now he's going to be healthier, but I still think he's not going to be close, obviously, to 100%. You just rotate guys, just hound him, put pressure on him. I don't see them keeping up with us. And my score, Glenn, and I'm going to get the pasta figure of hoagie that day because I just got to do it. 41-24 Birds. And they're going to score a garbage touchdown at the end and make it 24. I just don't see them.
Wow.
There you go. Thank you. Appreciate it. Hope it's right.
Rob from Glen Olden coming in hot with a, you know, 3-score difference there. One correction we got to make first, Glenn. The NFL draft is in Kansas City this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew there was a Super Bowl tie. That's right. That's right. It's going to be very disappointing for them when they have the 31st pick of the draft.
So much confidence here.
Well, it's funny. I said that, but I'm goofing. People, and I may do the tomorrow when I'm working with Jody, I may make this a theme. 5 years ago, everybody put on the underdog masks and everybody strutted around. But let's be honest. The Eagles were the underdogs. And this being Philadelphia, deep inside, people had a lot of fatalism.
Yes.
This time, everybody thinks they're going to win and going away.
Yeah. It's a different pose.
It's a weird position to be in as a Philadelphian. I'm not used to having all this. I'm almost nervous because I'm so confident. Which, does that make sense?
If you're from Philadelphia or you've spent any amount of time here, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know, we like, the fans here like situations where they can root without having anything to lose or feel like they don't have anything to lose. That's why.
The Phillies, man. House money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was the sweet spot of Philadelphia fandom right there, the run the Phillies made. And I think this season is similar in that regard, in that the Eagles are better than anybody thought they would be. And they're so good that people are looking at this and saying, well, okay, like it's not so uncomfortable to be rooting for the favorite this time around.
I find it odd.
And yet.
I do. I find it odd. Warren in Gwynedd Valley. Hello, Warren.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Always.
Mike, how you doing?
Hi, Warren.
I don't like the feeling of, you know, boasting that the Eagles are going to win, but then feeling that what if they don't, and I put myself out there. It's just,
yes,
like you guys are saying right now,
it's a
very strange feeling.
It's a very odd feeling. The other thing
is, the lead up to this is also kind of awkward, where, you know, you've got a disrespected team and you've got an over, you know, appreciated team in Kansas City and Andy Reid, where we have to earn the respect as the favorite, and the Kansas City gets all the respect. It's another.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think in Kansas? Actually, our next caller lives in Kansas City, so I want to ask him. Do you think Kansas City right now the narrative is hey, we've been to two of the last three Super Bowls. We won one of them, and yet we're the underdog? Nobody believes in us. You think they're playing that out there?
Probably. Most likely.
Mike, does that ever work?
You know, I don't know if it works or not. I would wonder if the shoe were on the other foot and the Chiefs were playing in Philadelphia, meaning that was the Philadelphia had the Chiefs as its team and Kansas City had the Eagles.
Yeah.
Would people be saying, boy, I wonder, I hope Andy manages the clock all right. Or I hope, you know, I hope our team doesn't take a big lead early and then squander it late, because that's happened a couple of times to him in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I have a Tom Brady feeling when you were referencing where were you when Tom Brady retired.
Yeah.
I was thinking, when he goes into broadcasting, I think it's going to be related to the Hindenburg disaster, because I think he's going to go down in flames.
Wow.
Thanks.
Can we make any more historically inappropriate comparisons on this show?
Hey, it's Sean O'Hara, baby.
Yeah, I know.
He started it.
I know.
All right, Clay is in Kansas City. Clay, you're an expat, right? We've talked to you a lot.
No, actually, Glenn, I'm from here.
Oh, you are?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so remind me your connection to Philadelphia.
I have none, other than when I was growing up.
Well, you've been calling us for a while.
Hey, listen, I've been listening to the show for years. Thank God for the Odyssey app, because I'm a huge Eagles fan.
And we appreciate that. I'm just, how did that happen,
Clay?
So when I was, remember Frank Gans when he took over the Chiefs back in like 1987? The Chiefs were awful.
Yeah.
They were terrible. And like, I'm like a elementary school kid, and they're trying to force feed us the Cowboys, and I knew they're evil. So I just wanted to pick a different team. And I loved Buddy Ryan. I loved him in the 46ers.
Okay.
And they had Reggie and Randall. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go against the grain and be an Eagles fan. So I've been called a bandwagon fan before. But who in the hell was jumping on the Eagles bandwagon in 1987? Let's be honest.
That's a fair point, Clay. Got to admire that it was those teams that drew you into the Eagles, definitely.
Yeah, and Sonny Ticket makes it real easy in the internet. Like, I follow all the beat writers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Huge fan. Like, I know more about the team than my buddy that lives in Jenkintown. He's always calling me for the Eagles scoop. So
very cool.
Anyway, so I will say this. After the Chiefs won Sunday night, I get the, you know, some text like, hey, we're going to beat you guys. But I have heard nothing this week, because I'm a well-known Eagles fan, okay? I've got no dirty messages, no we're going to kick your butt. I called in to Ike's show earlier this week, and here's my take on this, okay? The Chiefs may have the best three players on the field. Chris Jones is really good. Travis Kelce is really, really good. And Mahomes is an alien, right? We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, the next 15 players that are the best players are going to be wearing green. I mean, this team is loaded with talent. And you made a really good reference, Glenn, when you talked about that Bucs beat down the Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Chiefs' offensive line is not much better than it was then. So, I mean, they have Creed Humphrey. He's a nice player. Because I do watch a lot of Chiefs games.
Mm-hmm.
But I will just tell you, I don't think they can block the Eagles' front. The Chiefs' defensive ends, they are nowhere like Joey Bosa and the other kid for the 49ers. They're not even Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yeah.
They're just guys.
I think I got to hit a break, but I appreciate it. And I think I don't know that I agree the best three players are in the Chiefs, because right now I think I might put Hassan Reddick on the best three players.
Darn right.
And I think the Eagles center and right guard, or center and right tackle, are guys who consider that. But, yeah, if you take the best 10 players on the field, 7 of them are going to be Eagles.
Yeah. Look, again, we said this before the show, Glenn, but I think there is, at their core, this Chiefs team is basically the same as the Patriots team that the Eagles beat 5 years ago. You have an all-time great head coach. Back then you had Bill Belichick. This time it's Andy Reid. You have an all-time great quarterback, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. You have an all-time great tight end, Rob Gronkowski, Travis Kelce. Both those teams, though, were top-heavy. And that to me is the key to this whole thing. If the Eagles are able to kind of withstand what Mahomes and Kelce can do, they should win this game.
All right, quick break. 215-592-9494. Mike Zielski, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Mike Zielski, Glenn Mack now on a Saturday. We are 1 week away from the Super Bowl 57 Eagles against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know what I'm about to play occurred a full week ago, so it's really looking back in the rearview mirror. But I heard this week. I love Brian Baldinger's Baldy Breakdowns, which I look at on Twitter as often as I can. And he did one on Jordan Mailata blocking Joey Bosa. Really, about the whole team blocking Bosa. Nick Bosa, sorry.
Yeah,
Joey is the brother who wanted to fight the fans last week.
That's true, yes.
Right, Nick
and
Bosa.
The fans were ready to fight him
back.
They
were ready to go. Nick Bosa, thank you. But this is Baldy's breakdown of the Eagles, and specifically Mailata blocking Nick Bosa.
The story here in this play, and the story of the season, is the Eagles' offensive line. That's Mailata on Nick Bosa. Now, not everybody has Mailata, but Mailata puts Bosa right on his Bosa right here. Like, and not just puts him down, but he's going to gator him, he's going to sit on him, he's going to breathe on him, he's just going to let him know, we're here all day. All right? That's just the way Mailata plays, Dickerson, Kelsey, they all play the same way. Like, nobody has this mentality on the offensive line in this league like the Eagles do.
Baldy, of course, a former offensive lineman himself, and he gets it. And it's just, I love, he lies on him, he breathes on him, he lets him know we're here. Great job by Baldy, but, you know, I mean, as you were talking earlier and you're working on a column, what these guys have learned from Jeff Stoutland, this offensive line, game in and game out, is so damn good.
It is. And, you know, to go back to our previous segment, Glenn, where we were discussing why we think that so many people are reluctant to give the Eagles credit publicly for what's happening here. I wonder if part of it is because the true strength of this team is the offensive line. And that's not a sexy thing to talk about.
Right.
Like, it would be different if, not that Jalen Hurts has had a bad season or hasn't had a great season. Of course he has. But it's not Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. The key to this is they just freaking block better than you, and they don't allow you to block them on the other side of the ball.
The
and so what do you say about that other than do what Baldy has done and what some other people can do is and get really technical about offensive and defensive line play?
Right. The cliche is you win the games in the trenches, but those aren't the guys who get on television.
Exactly.
Right? And they, you know what? I'm not doing this now, but somewhere along the line, if this offensive line had gotten a sexy nickname, right, the Hogs.
Yeah,
it might have gotten them a little more attention because they are great. Lou in Mount Laurel is with us. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. How are you guys?
Doing well, Lou. Thanks.
I'll tell you what, Glenn. I'm not going to remember where I was when Tom Brady retired a first second. I don't remember where I was when he got divorced, but I remember where I was when my life turned around, and that was the Haverford Stadium, and all because of one Glenn Mack now.
Lou, I appreciate this immensely. This is a story that goes back a long way.
Okay.
Lou was a teenage goalie playing in
Haverford
a game.
Hawk. Yes, proud Haverford Hawk.
Yes, he was. Lou, I'll let you tell the story because I appreciate that you occasionally remember it. So you can.
No,
tell
I remembered all this. I'm telling you, it turned my life around. You were the Sonny to my Calogero, telling me use your head, C. Don't do it, C.
So I took
what you would call an unwise penalty after the game in the handshake line after getting probably a couple roughing minors. So I'm leaving the ice, and who do I see? Glenn Mack now pulls me aside, and I was wearing number 27. He said, son, what are you doing? You have too much talent. You're playing like the guy you're emulating on the number. Use your head. You're too good for that. And I'll tell you what, turned my life around to Haverford Stadium. I went, Dad, that guy from the radio lit me up. He goes, good. That man's right. You should listen to Glenn.
Wow.
And that's it. Path to success after that.
And Lou is now an educator, a respected man in his
elementary
community.
Elementary school principal, yes. Father, you name it.
Yeah. Wow.
So I got to ask, Lou, you made the Bronx Tale reference here. Did you, did your wife open the door for you on the car when you went on your first date with her?
Yes, she did. I absolutely.
There you go. That's
Lou,
all you need to know.
I tried it on my Nissan Altima, and then I think after I got in, it was, you have the automatic key, right? Okay, yeah, you're right.
Lou, I'm really touched that you remember that, and I really know, like what a upstanding member you are in the community. Yeah. So, what happens next week?
I think the Eagles win. I think it's close. And I want to ask you guys, from a psychological standpoint, how much do you think the fans are going, okay, I know it's a different sport, different season. There's no way, and I know the Union lost that day too, but there's no way we can drop two major championships with the Phillies losing, so we're going to win. How much do you think psychologically we're kind of talking ourselves, we're just going to kill them, they shouldn't even show up, like the Chiefs shouldn't show up. How much do you think from a psychological standpoint, since the Phillies lost, you're going, we're going to win?
Now, I'm not sure that's a factor, Lou. I haven't heard anybody citing that, as a reason why they think the Eagles will win. In fact, that thought hadn't occurred to me until you mentioned it. To be very honest. So I don't think people are looking at it that way. I think they feel pretty confident based on the team that the Eagles have.
Okay, good.
We're not used to it, though. Lou, it's a pleasure.
No, thank you, guys.
I'll talk to you after.
Absolutely love you two together on
Saturday.
You got it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Lou. Appreciate it. It's very nice he remembers.
Yeah. But to his question, I really haven't gotten that sense at all.
No.
People are saying, oh, well, we can't possibly lose three championships.
No, I do feel there's a little bit of we're not used to this spot.
Yes.
We embrace that underdog role very well.
I did an interview last week with a podcaster, and he was asking me, what's Philadelphia like now? And the line I used with him, which I think is what you're saying, is the Rocky stuff is real. People embrace that.
Yeah.
And it is. It's an it's like sitting in a chair that you can't quite get comfortable in. It's hard to get used to the idea that the Eagles are supposed to win the Super Bowl.
Right. So there's part of me that says, like, okay, so I'm going to discount that. But then when I look at it, I think, like, well, that's because the Eagles are better.
Yeah.
They're really good. I think Bridget in Florida may agree as well. Bridget, what do you think?
Hello. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning, Bridget.
Oh, I'm calling from Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I started my career in Cocoa Beach, Florida, right down the road from
Really?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
My first newspaper job was on that Florida Today paper down there.
Yes. I did an interview for the Florida Today papers when we had one of our Phillies, and they asked me, who do you think we should put in? It was one of our past Philly players, and he put him in the next day, and we won the game.
Well, there you go. Nice work by you.
Good job.
Yeah. So, my opinion, okay, let me ask you guys this. Now, I asked the guy earlier, maybe you guys could remember this. 5 years ago today, we won our first championship. Now, I remember Tom Brady walking off the field, no congratulations or nothing.
We literally just watched it on the NFL Network. They just played the game as we were doing the show, and I got to be honest, I was nervous on that last play.
He was.
But yes, he did. He walked off. He would not shake Nick Foles' hand. You're correct.
Yeah. Did he say put something on Twitter? Now, I heard that he said, oh, I couldn't see that because of the smoke.
I believe, Brady, I don't know that he put it on Twitter, but I believe over time he has said that it was not intentional.
Yes.
Okay.
But it has happened again.
Yes.
In subsequent years where he has snubbed the opposing quarterback.
I think that's just wrong because I've seen in the last, every Super Bowl that I watch, I've seen all the quarterbacks hug each other, congratulate each other, the coaches. With him, it was just like, whoop, and I was like, I just found it disrespectful.
And we will hold that grudge against Brady forever, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you. Absolutely,
yeah.
We will.
You know, my colleague Marcus Hayes, our colleague here at WIP, wrote a column after Brady's retirement basically saying, like, look, people think Tom Brady's a good guy because he's a great quarterback. Tom Brady, not that great a guy.
Yeah.
So I encourage people who feel that way to read Marcus's column because he laid out a pretty strong case.
215, speaking of Tom Brady, 215-592-9494. We will talk with Seth Wickersham coming up, ESPN senior writer who wrote the book, It's Better to Be Feared, The New England Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit of Greatness. I believe there's a little bit on Tom Brady in that book.
Just a tad.
We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about his guy covers the NFL. What a guy, you know, not one of us from Philadelphia, how does he view it? With Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now on a Saturday. We are 1 week away from the Super Bowl 57 Eagles against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know what I'm about to play occurred a full week ago, so it's really looking back in the rearview mirror. But I heard this week. I love Brian Baldinger's Baldy Breakdowns, which I look at on Twitter as often as I can. And he did one on Jordan Mailata blocking Joey Bosa. Really, about the whole team blocking Bosa. Nick Bosa, sorry.
Yeah,
Joey is the brother who wanted to fight the fans last week.
That's true, yes.
Right, Nick
and
Bosa.
The fans were ready to fight him back.
They were ready to go. Nick Bosa, thank you. But this is Baldy's breakdown of the Eagles, and specifically Mailata blocking Nick Bosa.
The story here in this play, and the story of the season, is the Eagles offensive line. That's Mailata on Nick Bosa. Now, not everybody has Mailata, but Mailata puts Bosa right on his Bosa right here. Like, and not just puts him down, but he's going to gator him, he's going to sit on him, he's going to breathe on him, he's just going to let him know, we're here all day. All right? That's just the way Mailata plays, Dickerson, Kelce, they all play the same way. Like, nobody has this mentality on the offensive line in this league like the Eagles do.
Baldy, of course, a former offensive lineman himself, and he gets it. And it's just, I love, he lies on him, he breathes on him, he lets him know we're here. Great job by Baldy, but, you know, I mean, as you were talking earlier and you're working on a column, what these guys have learned from Jeff Stoutland, this offensive line, game in and game out, is so damn good.
It is. And, you know, to go back to our previous segment, Glenn, where we were discussing why we think that so many people are reluctant to give the Eagles credit publicly for what's happening here, I wonder if part of it is because the true strength of this team is the offensive line. And that's not a sexy thing to talk about. Right. Like, it would be different if, not that Jalen Hurts has had a bad season or hasn't had a great season. Of course he has. But it's not Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. The key to this is they just freaking block better than you, and they don't allow you to block them on the other side of the ball.
The line.
And so what do you say about that other than do what Baldy has done and what some other people can do is and get really technical about offensive and defensive line play.
Right. The cliche is you win the games in the trenches, but those aren't the guys who get on television.
Exactly.
Right? And they, you know what? I'm not doing this now, but somewhere along the line, if this offensive line had gotten a sexy nickname, right, the Hogs,
yeah,
it might have gotten them a little more attention because they are great. Lou in Mount Laurel is with us. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. How are you guys?
Doing well, Lou. Thanks.
I'll tell you what, Glenn. I'm not going to remember where I was when Tom Brady retired a first, second. I don't remember where I was when he got divorced. But I remember where I was when my life turned around. And that was the Haverford Stadium, and all because of one Glenn Mack now.
Lou, I appreciate this immensely. This is a story that goes back a long way.
Okay.
Lou was a teenage goalie playing in
Haverford
a game.
Haverford Hawk. Yes, proud Haverford Hawk.
Yes, he was. Lou, I'll let you tell the story because I appreciate that. That you occasionally remember it, so you can.
No, I remembered all this. I'm telling you, it turned my life around. You were the Sonny to my Calogero, telling me use your head, see, don't do it, see.
I took
what you would call an unwise penalty after the game in the handshake line after getting probably a couple roughing minors. So I'm leaving the ice, and who do I see? Glenn Mack now pulls me aside, and I was wearing number 27. He said, "Son, what are you doing? You have too much talent. You're playing like the guy you're emulating on the number. Use your head. You're too good for that." And I'll tell you what, turned my life around to Haverford Stadium. I went, "Dad, that guy from the radio lit me up." He goes, "Good. That man's right. You should listen to Glenn."
Wow.
And that's it. Path to success after that.
And Lou is now an educator, a respected man in his community.
Elementary school principal, yes. Father, you name it.
Yeah. Wow.
So I got to ask, Lou, you made the Bronx Tale reference here. Did you, did your wife open the door for you on the car when you went on your first date with her?
Yes, she did. I absolutely.
There you go. That's all you need to know.
I tried it on my Nissan Altima, and then I think after I got in, it was, "You have the automatic key, right?" Okay, yeah, right,
Lou, I'm really touched that you remember that, and I really know, what a upstanding member you are in the community. Yeah. So, what happens next week?
I think the Eagles win. I think it's close. And I want to ask you guys, from a psychological standpoint, how much do you think the fans are going, "Okay, I know it's a different sport, different season. There's no way," and I know the Union lost that day too, "but there's no way we can drop two major championships with the Phillies losing, so we're going to win." How much do you think psychologically we're kind of talking ourselves, "We're just going to kill them. They shouldn't even show up. Like, the Chiefs shouldn't show up." How much do you think from a psychological standpoint, since the Phillies lost, you're going, "We're going to win"?
Now, I'm not sure that's a factor, Lou. I haven't heard anybody citing that, as a reason why they think the Eagles will win. In fact, that thought hadn't occurred to me until you mentioned it, to be very honest. So I don't think people are looking at it that way. I think they feel pretty confident based on the team that the Eagles have.
Okay, good.
We're not used to it, though. Lou, it's a pleasure.
No, thank you, guys.
I'll talk to you after.
Absolutely love you two together on
you
Saturday.
Got it. Thanks,
you, gentlemen.
Lou. Appreciate it. It's very nice he remembers.
Yeah, but to his question, I really haven't gotten that sense at all.
No.
People are saying, we can't possibly lose three championships.
No, I do feel there's a little bit of we're not used to this spot.
Yes.
We embrace that underdog role very well.
I did an interview last week with a podcaster, and he was asking me, "What's Philadelphia like now?" And the line I use with him, which I think is what you're saying, is the Rocky stuff is real. People embrace that.
Yeah.
And it is. It's an uncomfortable. It's like sitting in a chair that you can't quite get comfortable in. It's hard to get used to the idea that the Eagles are supposed to win the Super Bowl.
Right. So there's part of me that says, like, okay, so I'm going to discount that. But then when I look at it, I think, like, well, that's because the Eagles are better.
Yeah.
They're really good. Yeah. I think Bridget in Florida may agree as well. Bridget, what do you think?
Hello. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning, Bridget.
Oh, I'm calling from Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I started my career in Cocoa Beach, Florida, right down the road from
Really?
There. Yes, yes.
Okay.
My first newspaper job was on that Florida Today paper down there.
Yes. I did an interview for the Florida Today papers when we had one of our Phillies, and they asked me, who do you think we should put in? It was one of our past Philly players, and he put him in the next day, and we won the game.
There you go. Nice work by you.
Good job.
Yeah. So, my opinion, okay, let me ask you guys this. Now, I asked the guy earlier, maybe you guys could remember this. 5 years ago today, we won our first championship. Now, I remember Tom Brady walking off the field, no congratulations or nothing.
We literally just watched it on the NFL Network. They just played the game as we were doing the show, and I got to be honest, I was nervous on that last play.
He was.
But yes, he did. He walked off. He would not shake Nick Foles' hand. You're correct.
Yeah. Did he say put something on Twitter? Now, I heard that he said, oh, I couldn't see that because of the smoke.
I believe, now Brady, I don't know that he put it on Twitter, but I believe over time he has said that it was not intentional.
Yes.
Okay.
But it has happened again.
Yes.
In subsequent years where he has snubbed the opposing quarterback.
I think that's just wrong because I've seen in the last, every Super Bowl that I watch, I've seen all the quarterbacks hug each other, congratulate each other, the coaches. With him, it was just like, whoop, and I was like, I just found it disrespectful.
And we will hold that grudge against Brady forever, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you. Absolutely,
yeah.
We will.
You know, my colleague Marcus Hayes, our colleague here at WIP, wrote a column after Brady's retirement basically saying, like, look, people think Tom Brady's a good guy because he's a great quarterback. Tom Brady, not that great a guy.
Yeah.
So I encourage people who feel that way to read Marcus's column because he laid it out pretty strong case.
215, speaking of Tom Brady, 215-592-9494. We will talk with Seth Wickersham coming up, ESPN senior writer who wrote the book, It's Better to Be Feared, The New England Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit of Greatness. I believe there's a little bit on Tom Brady in that book.
Just a tad.
We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about his guy covers the NFL. What a guy, you know, not one of us from Philadelphia, how does he view it? With Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.